Today is Thursday, December 9th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chin Adolfo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. President Joe Biden rules out deploying American troops into Ukraine.
The idea the United States is going to unilaterally use force to confront Russia invading Ukraine is not in the cards right now.
Plus, the U.S. launches virtual summit for democracy, hosting more than 100 world leaders.
We approach this week with both humility and confidence. Humility in that we want to listen and learn and don't shy away from our shortcomings.
Also, the WFP suspends food distribution in Ethiopian towns after looting of supplies. Our top story today is in the U.S. U.S. President Joe Biden said on Wednesday putting American troops on the ground in Ukraine to deter a potential Russian invasion was, quote, not on the table, unquote, and he hoped to announce a meeting with Russia and NATO countries by Friday. Biden told reporters he had made it clear to Russian President Vladimir Putin during his nearly two-hour virtual meeting on Tuesday that there will be economic consequences like none before if Russia invades Ukraine, and he is confident Putin got the message.
We have a moral obligation and a legal obligation to our NATO allies if they were to attack under Article 5. It's a sacred obligation. That obligation does not extend to Ukraine, but it would depend upon what the rest of the NATO countries were willing to do as well. But the idea the United States is going to unilaterally use force to confront Russia invading Ukraine is not in the cards right now. But what will happen is there will be severe consequences that will have.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Wednesday that Russia would send proposals to Washington within a week to follow up on his talks with U.S. President Joe Biden on Ukraine. Putin told reporters the talks had been open and constructive, and the main thing was there was a possibility to continue the dialogue. But he called suggestions that Russia was planning to attack Ukraine, quote, provocative, unquote. The United States is launching a virtual summit for democracy on Thursday, hosting more than 100 world leaders, civil society activists, and journalists in what he says is the largest gathering of its kind ever held. As VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sen reports, the State Department says America is approaching the global attack on democracy with, quote, humility and confidence, unquote.
The hours-long seizure of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th by supporters of Donald Trump, seeking to overturn his electoral defeat, shook many around the world, including incoming President Joe Biden. That attack is part of what moved Biden to host a major summit for democracy, says U.S. Undersecretary of State for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights, Usra Zeya.
We approach this week with both humility and confidence. Humility in that we want to listen and learn and don't shy away from our shortcomings. Confidence in our constant striving for a more perfect union, and our certainty that working together, democracies can and will deliver for the world's citizens, regardless of the raw deal that autocrats and authoritarians tried to sell.
The January 6th insurrection left its mark and is influencing how other countries behave on the world stage, according to Brian Katulis of the Middle East Institute. He spoke to VOA.
I hear more of posture from countries, friends, adversaries, competitors alike, that many of them are going to be hedging against the United States, meaning they're not going to be all in necessarily, in part because they see the world's changing, but then to a large degree, they worry about a pendulum swing in the United States, meaning, you know, they saw things shift substantially from President Obama to President Trump, and now it's shifting in a different direction under President Biden.
The struggle between the world's democracies and authoritarian governments has been a central focus of the Biden administration's foreign policy, with crises in Myanmar, Haiti, and Sudan, among many other places. Authoritarian leaders of countries like Russia and China are not invited to the summit. Russia and China have criticized the summit itself as anti-democratic and divisive. On a recent visit to Kenya, Secretary of State Antony Blinken described what he called a worrying democracy recession on the African continent and around the world.
Democracy falling back. It's being tested democracy in all sorts of ways, from inside and from outside. And we've seen citizens' trust in democracy decrease. We've seen bad actors play up some of the divisions that exist within democracies, independent institutions challenged and undermined, journalists, human rights activists threatened and attacked.
Biden envisions the summit as kicking off a year of action, promoting democracy, fighting corruption and extremism, and protecting detained and threatened journalists and human rights activists around the world. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
China has condemned Australia's diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics as, quote, political posturing, unquote. China's treatment of its Uyghur minority spurred Australia's decision, which followed a similar US move. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia's boycott of the Winter Games in China includes politicians and diplomats. It comes as friction between the two countries intensifies over human rights, trade, and allegations of Chinese interference in Australia's domestic affairs. Canberra's call last year for an inquiry into the origins of COVID-19 also infuriated Beijing, which took it as criticism of its handling of the virus. Disputes over Hong Kong's democracy movement and China's military ambitions in the South China Sea have also contributed to the tension. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
It is not surprising that Australian government officials would therefore not be going to China for those games. Australian athletes will, though. Australia's a great sporting nation. I very much separate the issues of sport and these other political issues, and I would like to see those issues resolved, but they are not resolved. Australia will not step back from the strong position we've had standing up for Australia's interests.
China has said that tensions in the bilateral relationship lie squarely on the Australian side. China is Australia's biggest trading partner. Political disputes in recent years have seen China impose tariffs and restrictions on a range of Australian imports, including coal, wine, barley and lobsters. Caitlin Byrne is the director of the Griffith Asia Institute at Griffith University in Queensland. She says Australia's diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics could cause China to retaliate.
Will it achieve any significant outcome? Possibly not. And in fact, it does bring risks as well. China has already said in response to the United States' statement of the diplomatic boycott and in response to Australia that there will be countermeasures. And we are likely to see some kind of response. It's not clear what that will be.
Australia's diplomatic boycott follows a similar move earlier this week by the United States and Britain. On Thursday, Canada said it too wouldn't send officials to the Winter Olympics, which start February 4 in the Chinese capital. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The Ethiopian-Sudan border conflict has escalated again with new clashes between Sudanese and Ethiopian troops in the disputed Al-Fashaga border area. Ethiopia and Sudan have been locked in a decade-old conflict over the area. The Sudanese army said elements of the Ethiopian army and affiliated militias attacked Barakat Norin town in the Al-Fashaga border area in a bid to intimidate farmers, destroy the harvest, and infiltrate into the Sudanese territory. Ethiopia has denied the allegations. Reporter Angie Omar spoke to Cameron Hudson, former chief of staff for the office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan, on the impact of this dispute on the Horn of Africa.
I think it's a reflection of the overall level of instability in the region. Ethiopia is obviously caught in a state of civil war. Sudan recently experienced a coup. And so I think that there's some opportunism going on both sides of the border, taking advantage of the instability, perhaps the other side not paying attention. Let's recall that this has been a disputed area between Ethiopia and Sudan for the better part of the last century. There's been a kind of gentleman's agreement that has governed it for the past decade or so. But really, this is a disputed territory. And I think both sides are seeing an opportunity right now, recognizing certain weaknesses on the other side of the border to try to take advantage and change the facts on the ground and resolve the dispute, not through a negotiated settlement, but rather through this kind of military opportunism that we're seeing right now.
Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the commander-in-chief of the Sudanese Armed Forces, said that Al-Fashaga border area with Ethiopia is a purely Sudanese land and bludgeoned not to give up even one inch of the Sudanese territory. However, Ethiopia rejected that, which led to clashes between the two countries' forces, claiming dozens of lives on both sides. What do you think is the way out?
Well, clearly there needs to be some kind of mediated settlement between the two countries that is lasting and durable. I think the problem is, of course, that on both sides of the border, both countries' leaders in Sudan and in Ethiopia are in their own domestic political struggles. And so neither of them are in a position right now, I think, to be showing a lot of compromise on this issue. For both sides, it's become a kind of rallying cry for nationalism, and it's been a rallying cry for, at least on the Sudanese side of the border, for the critical role that the military plays in the country. It's trying to justify its role in the political life of the country, and this is a way to do that, to demonstrate that it is still needed at the national level to secure the country's borders and guarantee the territorial integrity of the country. So I don't think either leader right now, given what's going on in their respective countries, is particularly interested in looking for a compromise, but that's certainly what's going to be required if we're going to have a lasting, peaceful solution to this.
In a bid to settle differences, the two countries held talks, yet no progress has been achieved. Meanwhile, all international mediation attempts, including by Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Russia, and the United Arab Emirates, failed to de-escalate the situation. Sudan refused to engage in a new round of talks before any border demarcation, and before Ethiopia recognized Al-Fashaga is a Sudanese land. If the conflict continues, how would that impact the stability and security of the Horn of Africa?
Well, I think we have to look at how it continues and if it is the spark for a wider conflagration or if it stays contained and confined to the Fashaga area. I think part of the concern is, of course, that there's such a heightened state of political instability on both sides of the border that any additional spark could see fighting between the two countries really spiral. That would be devastating for the region, just as the Ethiopian civil war has been, I think, devastating for the region. And so I have to keep a very close eye on what's happening and make sure that it does not spill out over border area, make sure that there are no additional forces that come in. For example, we know that Eritrean forces are in Ethiopia right now in Western Tigray, not very far from this disputed border area. So if we saw a massing of troops, if we saw the introduction of foreign troops into this region, I think there would be even greater cause for concern. And I think the international community would want to act very quickly to try to avoid an escalation any further beyond what we're seeing already.
That's reporter Angie Omar speaking with Cameron Hudson, former chief of staff for the Office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan. The World Food Program has suspended food distribution in Ethiopia's Kombolcha and Desi towns after looting of supplies that staff were unable to stop due to intimidation, including being held at gunpoint. UN spokesperson Stéphane Dujarric said Wednesday that a large quantity of food supplies, including nutritional items from malnourished children, were stolen in Kombolcha in the Amhara region. Government spokesman Legesse Tulu and military spokesperson Colonel Getnet Adane did not immediately respond to requests for comments. Dujarric said the looting and intimidation will worsen malnutrition and prolong food insecurity in northern Ethiopia, where an estimated 9.4 million people across the Tigray, Amhara, and Afar regions need food assistance. The finance minister of Sudan's former government says the country was unable to access $650 million in international funding in November when assistance was paused after a coup. The fund freezing puts in doubt basic import payments and the faith of economic reforms. Olivia Chan of Reuters reports.
Ibrahim, who was appointed to a civilian transitional government in February, said the main impact would be on development projects, covering areas including water supply, electricity, agriculture, health and transport. He said he hoped international support would return gradually over the next 3 to 6 months. Meanwhile, bills could be paid and reforms would continue.
Basically, we depend on tax, customs and gold revenues and on different state companies working in various fields.
Ibrahim said Sudan would seek investment rather than grants from wealthy Gulf Arab states that now face their own economic challenges.
Up till now, there have not been any promises of support from any country, Arab or non-Arab. But contacts with all friendly states continue, and with the international community as well.
Foreign funding was seen as crucial in helping Sudan emerge from decades of isolation and supporting a transition towards democracy that began with the 2019 overthrow of Omar al-Bashir. But the October 25th coup upended that transition. The U.S. has put on hold $700 million in economic assistance since the coup. The World Bank, which had promised $2 billion in grants, has paused disbursements.
That was Olivia Chan of Reuters. The World Health Organization says new data is emerging every day about the potential impact of the new Omicron variant on the coronavirus pandemic, but it is premature to draw conclusions about the severity of the infection. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Since Omicron was detected 2 weeks ago in South Africa, it has spread rapidly to 57 countries. The World Health Organization says certain features of the new coronavirus variant, including its global speed and large number of mutations, suggest it could have a major impact on the evolution of the pandemic. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says Omicron appears to be extremely contagious, with cases in South Africa rising more quickly than the Delta variant. That, he says, indicates an increased risk of reinfection with Omicron, but adds more data is needed to draw firmer conclusions.
There is also some evidence that Omicron causes milder disease than Delta, but again, it's still too early to be definitive. Any complacency now will cost lives. Many of those who don't die could be left battling long COVID or post-COVID condition.
Tedros says governments and individuals must act now and use all the tools available. He says all governments should reassess and revise their national plans based on their current situation and capacity.
Accelerate vaccine coverage in the most at-risk populations in all countries. Intensify efforts to drive transmission down and keep it down with a tailored mix of public health measures. Scale up surveillance, testing, and sequencing, and share samples with the international community.
WHO Chief Tedros urges nations to avoid what he calls the kind of ineffective and discriminatory travel bans that were slapped on southern African countries days after they reported the presence of the new variant. New evidence, however, reveals that Omicron was present in Western Europe before the first cases in southern Africa were officially identified. The WHO warns governments are likely to withhold important scientific information if they believe they will be punished instead of applauded for being transparent. That, it adds, would be very bad for global health. The message may be getting through. Tedros notes that France and Switzerland have lifted their travel bans on southern Africa. He welcomes that and urges other countries to follow their lead. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
BioNTech and Pfizer said on Wednesday a three-shot course of their COVID-19 vaccine was able to neutralize the new Omicron variant in a laboratory test and said they could deliver an upgraded vaccine in March 2022 if needed. The German and the U.S. company said two doses of their vaccine resulted in significantly lower neutralizing antibodies, but a third dose boosted those antibodies by a factor of 25. BioNTech CEO Ongar Sahin told reporters at an online news conference that with two vaccines, quote, these individuals will have a memory T cells and memory B cells as well as T cell responses which may protect from severe diseases, unquote. He added that they expect a significant protection against any type of COVID-19 for those who have received the third vaccine. This is the Voice of America. Iraq's National Security Advisor has tweeted that the last round of technical talks with the U.S.-led coalition has ended, signaling a new phase in the U.S. involvement in the fight against the Islamic State. Qasem al-Araji said that the last round of talks will formally end the coalition's combat mission, commencing a new phase of advising and assistance in the fight against IS. The formal end of the combat mission is unlikely to change the facts on the ground. The coalition stopped engaging in combat missions early in 2020. Negotiations between Iran and the world powers aimed at salvaging a tattered 2015 nuclear deal have resumed in Vienna after a few days' pause. A European Union diplomat was leading a meeting of all the deal's remaining signatories, Iran, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China on Thursday. The United States has been participating indirectly in the talks because it withdrew from the accord in 2018 under the then President Donald Trump. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Lebanon's dire economic crisis is threatening to cancel Christmas for most people. The Lebanese currency has lost more than 93% of its value against the dollar over the past 2 years, and soaring inflation is making it difficult for ordinary people to buy food and medicine, let alone Christmas trees and gifts. For VOA, Dale Gavlak reports from Amman.
With Christmas trees now costing between $80 to $120, almost double a Lebanese worker's monthly salary, some are resorting to telling their children that Santa Claus is sick this year and won't be able to bring them presents simply because parents are unable to buy the gifts. Most are struggling just to purchase food and medicine. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, reports that 77% of Lebanese families say they lack sufficient food, and 60% of them only buy food by running up unpaid bills or borrowing money. Political analyst Dania Khalia Khatib with the Issam Faris Institute at the American University of Beirut told VOA that although you may see some people shopping and think things are well, that's not the situation for most Lebanese.
People who live from paycheck to paycheck, they're suffering big time. These people will not see Santa, will not see Christmas, will not see anything. You get shocked when you go to restaurant. People in the restaurant, they represent how much of the Lebanese society. They're not 1 or 2%. The majority are very poor.
But in the upscale northern seaside resort of Batroun, it's hard to see Lebanon's financial woes. It has just opened the first Christmas market, which organizer Francois Barakat says he hopes will rival those in Europe in years to come. It has drawn Lebanese with money to spend, he told Dubai's The National Newspaper. Daniel Khalil Khatib says those Lebanese who have money now receive help with hard currency from family abroad or are those who work with international agencies. Others may have been lucky enough to withdraw U.S. currency from the bank before the government froze dollar accounts. Christmas will also witness a number of Lebanese expats return home to celebrate with family.
At Christmas, you will see celebration because a lot of people coming from outside, but that doesn't mean that people are better off. This is always the thing with the issue with Lebanon because you have a lot of expats coming in and coming out. If we didn't have this inflow from outside of hard currency to Lebanon, people will be dog-eat-dog. It would have been much worse.
The UN's World Food Program estimates that poverty in Lebanon has almost doubled this past March, affecting 3 million people compared with 1.7 million in 2020. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
Chinese property developers China Evergrande Group and Caixa Group were downgraded to, quote, restricted default, unquote, by rating agency Fitch for failing to pay offshore bond dues. A source told Reuters that Caixa had started work on restructuring its $12 billion offshore debt. The downgrades came on Thursday, even though Evergrande and Caixa have not officially announced the defaults, which could result in long debt restructuring processes. In its note on Evergrande, Fitch said the developers did not respond to its request for confirmation on the payment worth $82.5 million that were due last month. Quote, we are therefore assuming they were not paid, unquote, it said. Fitch defines a restricted default as indicating any issuer has experienced a default or a distressed debt exchange which has not begun winding up processes such as bankruptcy filings and remains in operation. Fitch said the non-payments has triggered, and quote, event of default, unquote, on Evan Grant's bonds and its other U.S. dollar notes will become due immediately if the bond trustees or holders of at least 25% of the bonds declare so. Evergrande, which has over $300 billion in liabilities and is at the heart of property crisis in China, said last week that he planned to forge ahead with restructuring of his debt. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Makwe Yabaro, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Afoy in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.